Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, June 9th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And this is Ndimiake Mwakalielie.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Police arrest protesters at Africa Unity Square in Harare.
Five of them have been taken. Among them is Patton, Pride Mkono, and some other comrades.
Zimbabwe's education minister says the newly introduced controversial national pledge is here to stay as it's part of its education policy.
Villagers start accessing fields following the removal of landmines planted by the Rhodesian security forces.
Grazing land is now in abundance, and the access to water near Mukumbura River, it is now clear because the mines are now removed.
And a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development says lifting targeted United States sanctions will strengthen President Mugabe's rule.
Lifting sanctions at this time will merely strengthen Robert Mugabe and the cabal around him by providing a major propaganda victory. The regime will claim that it has vanquished its imperialist oppressors and it now has formal American endorsement.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Police have arrested at least five people protesting against Zimbabwe's deteriorating social and economic situation at Africa Unity Square in Harare, some of them believed to be civic society activists planning to camp at the place for 16 days and 16 nights. This comes amid reports of conflicts among some of the activists drawn from the Zimbabwe Activist Alliance Occupy Africa Unity Square movement and the Zimbabwe Women in Politics Alliance camping there. Patson Dzamara, brother of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara, is among those said to be in police custody. Police were not available for comment. Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri speaks with Charles Nyoni of Itai Dzamara's Occupy Africa Unity Square, who claims that some of the protesters are spies planted by the state.
It's just unfortunate that this event took place in the early hours of the morning last night when the state decided to engineer some theatrics of their tricks to try by all means to deceive us and throw a cat among us, as like throwing a cat among the pigeons. But unfortunately, their tricks will not work, because what happened in the early hours of the morning is two police women dressed like civilians came asking for directions to Murewa. And when they were given the directions where they were supposed to go and get transport at Fort Bus Terminal, they decided to go the opposite direction and met up with the two male officers in the center of the square. They deliberated for a few minutes, and then they started running and screaming that they've been robbed coming the direction where the occupiers were, which resulted in police who were actually hiding in the bushes close by springing up and coming to arrest some of our comrades. Five of them have been taken. Among them is Patton, Pride Mkono, and some other comrades.
That was Occupy Africa Unity Square movement member Charles Nyoni. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe Activist Alliance founder Linette Mudewe has confirmed to Studio 7 that there is now a misunderstanding over the leadership of the 16 days and 16 nights at Africa Unity Square.
It's very unfortunate that when people are invited to come in solidarity for a project, they then muscle, wrestle, and want to control it. That's very unfortunate, because no one was supposed to be tackling, to be wanting to control. We should have been complimenting each other, recognizing that Zimbabwe Activist Alliance are the ones who initiated this project. So the partners, Zimbabwe Women Political Alliance and Occupy Africa Unity Square, are largely represented by Patson Dzamara. We are supposed to realize that this was a ZA initiative and they're coming in to support. It was just for 16 days and 16 nights. And ZA has created an agenda that we shared and believed this. So for them to now come, for other people, partners, to come and change the agenda and want to have their own film, it is very unfortunate. It was very, very unfortunate.
And that was Zimbabwe Activist Alliance founder Lynette Mudewe on the line with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri.
Despite a huge public outcry over the recent introduction of a national pledge in all schools in Zimbabwe, Education Minister Lazarus Dokora says it is mandatory under the national education policy for all schools in the country to ensure that pupils recite the pledge. Reporter Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Dokora, who was giving evidence on the National Schools Pledge in Parliament today, told the Education Parliamentary Committee that there was wide consultation before the pledge was implemented.
I have approximately 8,600 schools and some 4.2 million school children. We expect that with effect from 3 May, this is what they are doing.
He said the National Schools Pledge, which is part of the ongoing curriculum reform in the country, is meant to build in learners a sense of commitment to national values, dignity, respect for national heritage, and a sense of stewardship over national resources.
We have not done that which has not been done by other nations. We are simply coming on board when other nations have had these pledges already as they develop their young generations.
He said the National Schools Pledge was derived from the preamble of the Constitution, which lawmakers passed 3 years ago. But lawmakers said while it may be a noble idea, the outcry was largely because parents felt they had not been consulted. Lawmaker Trevor Sarwaka of the Movement for Democratic Change Formation of Morgan Tsvangirai asked the minister if he could consider amending it to include remembering those who died during the Gukurahundi era.
There's been a major outcry over the introduction and the imposition of the National Pledge. Would you consider taking this matter for a referendum so that you get the buy-in from the generality of Zimbabweans that indeed this is the way they want to take? This is not a small matter in that it seems to affect on the core beliefs, the families.
But Dokora said there was nothing more he could say as the matter is still being handled by the country's courts.
In fact, that was the second honourable member who asked, sought the inclusion of the Gukurahundi aspect and then the imposition of the Christian beliefs. I want also to say, Honourable Chair, that the matter has also been set down for termination at the Constitutional Court. So I would not express myself beyond what I've just done.
Asked why the pledge is not being performed by lawmakers and civil servants, if it was that important, Dokora said it was up to them to recite it. He said his ministry would be launching a competition for translating the National Schools Pledge in the country's national languages, including sign language. Dokora dispelled reports that the ministry was introducing uniforms for teachers and banning Scripture Union in schools, saying it was all not true. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chipera.
In a related development, students under state-sponsored scholarships in Algeria, Egypt and Russia have dismissed as misleading claims by Deputy Education Minister Godfrey Gandiwa that they have been finally paid annual stipends amounting to $3,000 each. Gandiwa told the Independent Newsday newspaper that the government has mobilized and released $1.2 million for the students that claim to have been reduced to beggars. The students told Studio 7 yesterday that some of them are now engaging in prostitution and other shady activities in order to survive outside Zimbabwe. Dismissing the deputy minister's claims, some of the students alleged that they have not received a cent from the government since January 2014. Efforts to contact Higher Education Minister Jonathan Moyo were fruitless as he was not reachable on his mobile phone. Professor Moyo had not yet replied to a tweet on this matter at the time of going on air.
Six years after independence, villages along the Zimbabwe-Mozambique border are still being seriously affected by landmines planted during the War of Liberation of the 1970s by the Rhodesian security forces to stop freedom fighters from entering the country. In several areas, some of the minefields are being cleared by a non-governmental organization, which is giving the villages a new lease of life. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa visited one of the demined areas and filed this report.
Most of the areas worst affected by landmines planted by the Ian Smith regime include Mukumbura communal lands, Sheba Forest, Bema Valley, Rositu to Muzite Mission, Sango Border Post to Crooks Corner and Border Streams. Some organizations clearing the landmines in Mukumbura say undetonated mines in the area are very dense, unfenced, and situated close to homesteads, schools, and clinics, and as a result are still seriously affecting the lives of local people. Several lives have been lost in the past as villagers have tried to use hoes and shovels to dig the landmines. Some villagers have also lost a lot of livestock, a source of livelihood in this border area. A non-governmental organization, Halo Trust, has brought hope to villagers in Mukumbura communal lands as it is in the process of clearing the minefields using modern technology. Halo Trust has cleared about 25 kilometers of the 400-kilometer stretch occupied by local people. Some of the villagers say they are now accessing their fields, grazing land, and a local river full of fish in cleared areas. One of the happy villagers is Shepherd Madzengerere.
Grazing land is now in abundance, and the access to water near Mukumbura River, it is now clear because the mines are now removed.
Another villager, Michael Mourinho of Kafudza village concurred, adding that the minefields have seriously affected their lives.
Some of the locals are benefiting more, or we can simply say three or four benefits. Firstly, the areas which are being cleared is given to the locals for farming production, and even their livestock, they are having good grazing areas.
July Picture Knowledge, the demining manager of Halo Trust, said they are expected to demine a 400-kilometer stretch along the border area.
We have a challenge of these minefields. Some have got deep-buried mines, and these minefields are barring people to cross from one point to another, especially from their villages to the grazing land, water points, and the field. So those are the challenges, and it's an economical barrier to the local resident. They cannot farm. They cannot even breed their own things. So all these things, it's an economical barrier. In those areas where we have cleared, it means people are happy. They have access, they are going to increase their land of production. We have cleared 27.9 kilometers free of mines. That land is just awaiting for Zimbabwe Mine Action Center to surrender it to the government so that we'll have land release. Out of 417, we're talking of 380 kilometers left.
Tom Deep, Halo Trust Program Manager, noted that they needed more resources to demine the border area.
With regards to the effect the mines are having on the community, they were really set up as a complete barrier along the minefield, along the border between Zimbabwe and Mozambique. The aim at the time being to stop freedom fighters crossing out of the country to get training, and then once they'd been trained to cross back into the country again with training and with equipment. And as such, it really is this hundreds of kilometers of physical barrier. What we find after the war is that people have come back and they find that one side of the road is a minefield and the other side of the road they're free to live. But very often their fields and the water sources are on the far side of the minefield. So we have big communities separated from their land, separated from water. And you know, the only really way to free that up is to clear the mines. So you know, that is what we're doing. In addition to just blockage of access to land, even with safe paths, people can use the paths, but we find that cattle can't. What we need to do is try and increase the size of what we're doing and perhaps look at smarter ways of doing some of the tasks. For instance, bringing in machines to deal with areas of high metal contamination or deep buried mines. At the moment, we're struggling through that with manual deminers, which is possible, but it's slow. And there are better ways, so we're currently seeking funding to do that.
Halo Trust estimates that over 1,550 people have been killed by the landmines from the time they were planted by the Rhodesian security forces. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mudadigwa.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
on the internet. Find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
some Zimbabweans condemn calls by ZANU-PF youth for President Mugabe to rule until he dies in office.
And a senior fellow at the Center for Global Development says lifting targeted United States sanctions will strengthen President Mugabe's rule.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
About 14,000 people are expected to gather to mourn the death of Muhammad Ali at a traditional Muslim memorial service, which will be broadcast live on television and streamed live online. The midday service in Louisville, Kentucky, will be held at Freedom Hall, where Ali fought his first professional fight in 1960.
The African Union force in Somalia says soldiers killed more than 100 Al-Shabaab militants who attacked a military base today.
And U.S. President Barack Obama says his role in this year's election to pick his replacement is to remind Americans that the presidency is a serious job.
Calls by ZANU-PF Youth League members in Manicaland province for President Robert Mugabe to rule until he dies in office have attracted scorn from members of the public and opposition parties and support among some ZANU-PF activists. Responding to a Studio 7 Facebook page thread on the youth suggestions that Mr. Mugabe should rule for life, one of the opponents, Tired Chikwata, said there's need for leadership renewal in Zimbabwe in order to take the nation to the next level. Chikwata was among at least 70 respondents who urged the president to pave way for a new leader. But some respondents like Shine Kutama and Edwell Baba Sakutukwa supported the ZANU-PF youth, saying Mr. Mugabe should rule until he dies in office. Two ZANU-PF factions are currently fighting to succeed the president, with one of them already having endorsed Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa as Mr. Mugabe's heir apparent. This act, the Manicaland youth that are said to be backing First Lady Grace Mugabe for the presidential seat. For perspective, Studio 7's Gibbs Dube reached Obed Gutu, MDCT spokesperson, and Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF UK chairperson. Gutu said the ZANU-PF youth are daydreaming.
Of course, I'm sure they are smoking something that is very harmful to their mental health. I mean, for anyone who says that a 92-year-old man, soon to be 93, should rule for life, I believe that obviously they are not serious. I think that's a joke that is not funny. It is not a secret that President Robert Mugabe is a very old man. I mean, he has had his time. They are not even aware that constitutionally he can only do 2 5-year terms. But they say even if he goes for the second term, assuming that he wins, because they obviously are planning to rig 2018, they are saying if he is alive in 2023, they say he should continue until he dies. So that means, assuming he lives for until he's about 120, 130 years, you know, his mother, Mbuya Bona, died at 103 or even 104 years. They say for as long as he's alive, he should be the president of Zimbabwe. And they say if need be, if he's alive, if the constitution has to be amended to accommodate him, so be it. That is what the ZANU-PF youth are saying. And I'm saying, look, whoever is advising these kids, these youth, obviously, is doing a very bad job.
So, Mr. Mangwana, you know, some of these kind of discussions actually may have a very serious impact on Zimbabwe. Like when we talk about the president ruling for life and all those kind of things, what do you think really should happen? Because some people are demanding that the president should leave anyway.
It's not for anyone to demand that the president should leave. The people who determined in 2018, we go to polls, then the people would say the president has to leave. They can only do that in the ballot box. We cannot subvert the will of the people that was expressed in 2013. The people expressed...
No, 2013, there was no will of the people. It was rigged. It was rigging.
We cannot go down in those circles, Comrade Goody. It's pointless. You know, we'll differ there, and we will not achieve what this particular discussion is supposed to achieve. And we have to make a difference. We have to make a distinction, rather, between political bluster and a political narrative which is set for the party. For example, I'll give you an example of a political blaster is the MDC saying Mr. Tsvangirai would only relinquish power in the MDC when he has been to State House at least once. There are people that are saying that. But it doesn't mean that's the position of Mr. Gutu or anyone else. This is political bluster. So it doesn't mean that if Mr. Tsvangirai fails to get to the State House in 50 years' time, he will still be leading MDC. Again, that's political bluster. What does ZANU-PF want? ZANU-PF has got a Congress scheduled for 2019 in which we will go back and decide whether we want another leader or not.
And re-elect
Zimbabwe itself has got Zimbabwe itself has got an election scheduled for 2018 in which the people of Zimbabwe will choose.
I don't know, could I chip in there?
Mangwana, let him chip in.
Look, we are looking at Mr. Mugabe's age. Look, I was looking at him yesterday on television at the News Hour. I said to myself, look, if I had access to this gentleman, who happens to be Mzuguru Wedu, because I am his Zeguru, I would really tell him to say, Mzuguru, I think you've had your time. Because all we are saying is, we should feel pity for him. He's an old man. You can see he's even struggling to walk. And for people to force that old man to still hang in there, they are doing it not for the benefit of the country. They are doing it not for the benefit of the nation. They are doing it for their own selfish reasons. These are people who are taking advantage of Mr. Mugabe's frailty. They know that whilst he's there in that condition, you can let them do what they want, do all the looting. And these are actually dangerous people. These are not patriots. So we are saying, for those of us who genuinely care for Mr. Mugabe because he's my guru, we would want him to retire and enjoy his retirement, not for people to force him to hang in there when he's clearly unable to hold on to power.
Mr. Mangwana, are you holding the president to some kind of, you know, ransom?
No. The president is being held to ransom nobody. The president is a willing leader, unlike others who are reluctant leaders. He is a willing leader who is elected by the people. Let's go back to the people in 2018. We are not too far off. It's exactly 2 years, I think, around now. So we go back to 2018, and the people determine. If the people say, oh, President Mugabe, it's high time you rest, so be it. But if the people say, okay, old as you are, fragile as you might look, let's go back to the to State House, so be it again. Why are people afraid of the will of the people?
I'm actually surprised that this is coming from Comrade Mangwana. He should know better.
Mr. Gute and I are two people here. Just two people. There are nearly 7 million registered voters in Zimbabwe. So we are simply saying, let's go back to the 7 million voters in 2018 when the time is up, according to the Constitution. We both, Mr. Gude and I, we both respect the Constitution. So let's just go back to what the Constitution prescribes. And we do that. That's all. That's all we're asking for.
And that was Nick Mangwana, ZANU-PF UK chairperson, speaking with Studio 7 from London. You also heard from Obed Gudu, spokesperson of the MDCT formation led by Morgan Tsvangirai. Both spoke with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube. Don't miss the second edition of this interview, focusing on constitutional provisions governing presidential limits.
Now, of course, we all know that our constitution has no age limit regarding the president. I mean, you can be president, I mean, at whatever age, which is unfortunate. But anyway, that is what the constitution says. Our argument is saying, look, Mr. Mugabe is soon going to be 93. He's going to be 93 in early 2017, in February 2017. Look, he's an old man. If you look at him today, you actually feel pity for him to say, this is the man whom people are saying he should continue leading ZANU-PF.
So he has got that term. Let's not subvert the constitution. He has got the term. 2018, the decisions he are saying, if you are seeing that the man is withered and tired and whatever you say, what else you say, that's the whole point of going back to the people to say, do you renew the mandate or not? If the people say, no, we cannot renew this mandate, fine. But if the people say, as he is, let's go, then let's go.
Don't miss this interview tomorrow here on Studio 7.
Zimbabwe is one of 9 countries in sub-Sahara Africa currently under targeted United States sanctions, and a hearing here in Washington Wednesday sought to explore their effectiveness or necessity. One of the witnesses at the hearings advocated for the continuance of targeted sanctions on Zimbabwe.
Right now, the United States has targeted individual sanctions in place for 9 sub-Saharan countries, Burundi, Central African Republic, Cote d'Ivoire, Democratic Republic of the Congo, Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, and Zimbabwe. We also have arms export restrictions in place against most of these countries.
In opening the discussion on U.S. sanctions policy in sub-Sahara Africa at the U.S. Congress yesterday, Senator Jeff Flake, Republican Senator for Arizona, said he wanted to determine their effectiveness.
Today we aim to step back and explore the effectiveness of some of these efforts. We'll examine the recent track record of sanctions in Africa, when they've proven to be a useful tool in achieving our policy objectives, and under what circumstances they are falling flat or causing unintended consequences.
Responding to these questions, four experts in Africa, including Todd Moss, Chief Operating Officer and Senior Fellow for the Center for Global Development, who argue that in the case of Zimbabwe, the sanctions have not effectively met U.S. objectives, including the controversial ZIDERA, or Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act, set in place in early 2000 under former U.S. President George Bush, but said the sanctions for Zimbabwe should be maintained.
In my view, lifting sanctions at this time will merely strengthen Robert Mugabe and the cabal around him by providing a major propaganda victory. The regime will claim that it has vanquished its imperialist oppressors and it now has formal American endorsement.
Moss further disputed Zimbabwe's argument that the sanctions have hurt the country.
The lack of Zimbabwe's progress to date is not an indicator that sanctions per se have failed. Zimbabwe's decline continues primarily because of an entrenched, highly abusive regime combined with very unhelpful regional dynamics.
Honorable Princeton Lyman of the United States Institute of Peace and also senior advisor to the president cautioned against sanctions in all cases, saying often it is harder to lift them than impose them and that they're best used in combination with other strategies.
So the question is, how do you deal with countries like Sudan, like Zimbabwe and others, in which fundamental transformation is necessary to end the conflicts, but also to end the human rights violations? And I think it has to be a combination of a long-term strategy of engagement, perhaps sanctions layered, but linked to individual steps, and building the strong democratic capacities within the country. Because without those, even a change in regime doesn't necessarily produce the peace and democracy you want.
Another reality that Senator Flake, who recently visited Zimbabwe, wanted to know was the effectiveness of U.S. sanctions outside partners like the United Nations or the African Union. To this, Ambassador Lyman said, without support of key players, in the case of Zimbabwe, regional countries or the AU, any U.S. effort to push for UN or other sanctions are futile.
The rule of thumb that we have found is that when the Africans are unified on wanting UN sanctions, we can usually get them through. China and Russia won't say no if the Africans say this is what we want. But when the Africans are divided, the Chinese and the Russians say no.
Meantime, in looking ahead on Zimbabwe, with the uncertainty of President Mugabe's longevity in power, Moss says lifting sanctions on some promising members of the ZANU-PF party could help pave the way for a stronger Zimbabwe ahead.
We have lifted sanctions occasionally on actors that had them before when they have changed their behavior. And I think continuing to make those signals out there is very important for the United States, especially because there's such a high degree of uncertainty of where the international community stands on Zimbabwe.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. today, when hosts of the Women's Roundtable, Praxedis Jeremiah and Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye, will be talking with listeners about the cash crisis in Zimbabwe as queues become the order of the day.
Now, if you wish to join the show, please call us on 001-202-619-2077. That number again, 001-202-619-2077.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Police arrested protesters at the Africa Unity Square.
Zimbabwe's education minister says the newly introduced controversial national pledge is here to stay.
Villagers start accessing fields following the removal of landmines planted by the Rhodesian security forces.
And that's our broadcast this evening.
Please stay tuned for Studio 7 in Ndebele, hosted by Ntungamile Nkomo. This is Ndimiake Mokalielia wishing you a very good evening.
And remember to join us at 7 every evening for news in three languages and visit us on the internet at www.studio7news.com. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.